Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Actual News Podcast. Today is Thursday, December 19th, 2024, and today we discuss FAA prohibiting drones over New Jersey, Amazon workers on strike, potential governmental shutdown, 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, Putin threatening the world, and more global news. Let's begin. The Federal Aviation Administration announced Thursday that it is temporarily prohibiting drone flights over 22 utility locations in New Jersey for a 30-day period. This decision follows rising public concern and was made at the request of federal security agencies as a precautionary measure. The FAA's action comes shortly after it imposed similar restrictions on drone flights over two sites in New Jersey in November. The expanded ban underscores heightened security measures around critical infrastructure. The agency stated that the move was made in an abundance of caution to address potential safety and security risks. The temporary restriction aimed to safeguard utility sites from unauthorized drone activity, which could pose threats to public safety and operational integrity. The U.S. Department of the Treasury released its Treasury International Capital TIC data for October 2024 today, reporting a net TIC inflow of $203.6 billion. This figure includes net foreign acquisitions of long-term securities, short-term U.S. securities, and banking flows. Key details of the report include the net foreign private inflows. These accounted for $220 billion, while net foreign officials' outflows were $16.4 billion. Long-term U.S. securities foreign residents increased their holdings of U.S. long-term securities with net purchases totaling $136.3 billion. Of this, private foreign investors made net purchase of $126.6 billion, while foreign official institutions added $9.7 billion. So also you can find the detailed deep down into this map in your newsletter. And by the way, have you checked it out? It's the link in the description of this episode. So if this interests you, you can read all the details released by the TIC. Then let's talk about potential government shutdown that looms as Trump and Musk criticize funding bill. Potential governmental shutdown is becoming increasingly likely after President-elect Donald Trump instructed House Republicans to reject a bipartisan funding bill negotiated by House Speaker Mike Johnson. The bill was designed to keep government funded until March 14th, but Trump condemned it yesterday, urging its supporters in Congress to block the measure. He tweeted something like, "Sounds like the ridiculous, extraordinary, expensive continuing resolution, a dying fast, but can anyone imagine passing it without either terminating or extending the debt ceiling coming up in June? Unless the Democrats terminate or substantially extend debt ceiling tomorrow, I will fight till the end. This is nasty trap set in place by the radical left Democrats." And it goes so on and so on. And if you couldn't really understand what it's all about, neither did I. But anyway, Trump's criticism was echoed by his ally, Elon Musk, who also heavily criticized the bill on social media. The pushback from these high-profile figures has added uncertainty to the ongoing negotiations, raising the specter of a shutdown in the coming weeks if a new funding agreement is not reached. The situation is further complicated by economic concerns, as Federal Reserve officials signaled yesterday that inflation next year could be more persistent than previously anticipated. While the Fed announced an interest rate cut, officials cautioned that they would proceed carefully in the coming month, adding another layer of unpredictability to the nation's fiscal outlook. As the deadline approaches, lawmakers will have to navigate both political opposition and economic challenges to avoid a shutdown and keep the government running. Then on Thursday night, Donald Trump tweeted, "Success in Washington. Speaker Mike Johnson and the House have come to a very good deal. The newly agreed to American Relief Act of 2024 will keep the government open, fund our great farmers and others, and provide relief to those severely impacted by devastating hurricanes." To put it out there, all of that was in the previous bill. Okay. Then he says a very important piece vital to America First agenda was added as well. The date of the very necessary debt ceiling will be pushed out 2 years to January 30th, 2027. And the point is that he's trying to make that the vote will be later tonight. So probably after you have received this podcast, there will be a vote. The latest update will be then tomorrow morning during AM Actual News on YouTube. So please join me there. The link to that episode will be in the description of this podcast episode. All right. What I wanted to make a note of, though, that during the record-breaking 35-day government shutdown of 2018-19, one of the two shutdowns under, at that point, President Trump, during, of course, his first term, there, 420,000 federal workers were required to work without pay, while 380,000 were furloughed. The shutdown cost the U.S. economy $6 billion per week and reduced quarter four GDP by 0.1%. Now, if you probably have tried to order something from Amazon, or you were waiting to receive something from Amazon and experience some delays, the reason for it is that the Amazon.com workers at seven U.S. facilities staged a walkout early Thursday during the busy holiday shopping season, aiming to pressure the retail giant into contract negotiations. Organized by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, the strike marks the largest labor action against Amazon to date, involving workers in cities such as New York, Atlanta, and San Francisco. Quote, "If your package is delayed during the holidays, you can blame Amazon's insatiable greed," said Sean O'Brien, Teamsters' general president. He criticized the company for ignoring the union's December 15 deadline to negotiate, saying, quote, "the strike is on them," unquote. Amazon, however, downplayed the strike's potential impact, stating it does not anticipate disruptions to its operations. A spokesperson accused the union of intentionally misleading the public and employing tactics of threatening, intimidating employees and third-party drivers to participate. Unionized facilities represent just 1% of Amazon's hourly workforce. Observers note that Amazon's extensive network of warehouses and delivery depot, particularly in cities like New York, could help mitigate the strike, any strike-related delays. Amazon's reluctance to engage with union demands may stem from concerns about encouraging further unionization efforts. The company, which employs over 1.5 million people globally, has emphasized its preference for direct relationships with workers. Despite the strike, Amazon shares rose slightly in pre-market trading, signaling that investors anticipate minimal disruption. Earlier this year, Amazon announced $2.1 billion investment to raise wages for its U.S. fulfillment and transportation workers, increasing base pay by at least $1.5 to an average of $22 per hour, a 7% hike. The strike highlights ongoing tensions between the e-commerce giant and organized labor as workers demand greater recognition and improved conditions amid one of the busiest shopping sessions and seasons of the year. A group of 37 Democratic lawmakers led by Representatives Lloyd Doggett, Rosa DeLauro, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse have urged U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai to accelerate efforts to weaken or eliminate investor-state dispute settlement provisions in U.S. trade agreements. These mechanisms allow companies to bypass local courts and resolve disputes with governments through external tribunals. In a letter, the lawmakers criticize ISDS for enabling multinational corporations to extract excessive damages from governments over legitimate policy actions, citing a $16.5 billion claim by mining companies over Colombia's environmental protections. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce accused the Biden administration of engaging in secret negotiations to renegotiate investment chapters and trade deals with Colombia, Mexico, and Canada, a claim USTR has denied. The chamber warned that weakening ISDS provisions could harm U.S. businesses and shift supply chains away from the Western Hemisphere. Efforts to revise ISDS provisions may not conclude before President-elect Trump takes office on January 20th. During his previous administration, Trump largely eliminated ISDS from the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, citing concerns about outsourcing and political risk insurance. The lawmakers emphasized the need for bilateral executive agreements with willing trade partners to address the ongoing harm caused by ISDS mechanisms. In other news, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced a $100,000 billboard campaign in Mexico and Central America to discourage illegal immigration by highlighting dangers such as sexual assault and legal repercussions. One billboard reads, quote, "How much did you pay to have your daughter raped?" unquote, while another warns that migrants entering Texas illegally will be arrested. The campaign aims to convince migrants before President-elect Donald Trump takes office on January 20th that Texas braces for potential last-minute crossings. Trump has pledged mass deportations and aggressive border security measures, which align with Abbott's ongoing criticism of President Joe Biden's border policies. Although Biden's stricter measures earlier this year led to significant decline in illegal crossings, by the way, 60%, Abbott emphasizes that importance of communicating consequences to potential migrants is essential. Additionally, Texas plans to offer 1,400 acres near the border to Trump's administration to support mass deportation efforts. Now, the White House has reportedly provided the rebel group HTS in Syria with a list of former officials who may have information about the whereabouts of American journalist Austin Tice, unnamed sources told New York Times. Tice was abducted in Damascus in 2012 and has remained missing ever since. According to the report, HTS indicated a willingness to assist in the search for Tice and to investigate potential locations where he might be held. The group's involvement signals an unconventional approach in the ongoing efforts to locate the journalist, whose case has long been a priority to successive or for successive U.S. administrations. Now to Pentagon. The Pentagon revealed Thursday that the U.S. has 2,000 troops in Syria, significantly more than previously stated, which was 900. These additional forces are categorized as temporary and were deployed to support operations against Islamic State militia. Pentagon spokesperson Major General Pat Ryder admitted he was unaware of the higher figure until recently, acknowledging it likely reflects troops levels for months, possibly longer. For years, U.S. officials publicly reported a consistent deployment of 900 troops, collaborating with local forces to counter Islamic State resurgence. While President Joe Biden's administration has committed to maintaining a U.S. presence in Syria, President-elect Trump may decide to withdraw the troops after his inauguration on January 20th. Russian President Vladimir Putin's direct line Q&A session concluded after 4.5 hours, showcasing some of his most provocative and disturbing statements. Just to visualize, he's coming to a big room full of journalists from all around Russia and the world, and he just answers questions live on television for hours, which in this case was 4.5 hours. And here are the key highlights from Putin's remarks. First, war as entertainment. Putin described war as motion, confessing that he finds periods of stability boring. He stated, quote, "When everything is calm, stable, measured, and we get bored, we want some action. But when action begins, we get scared," unquote. Challenging the West for a duel. Putin proposed a hypothetical experiment with the West, suggesting a high-tech duel. He provocatively challenged Western nations to concentrate their air defenses in Kyiv, claiming Russia would target the area to test the outcomes. The Russian leader also declared that his actions had not only safeguarded Russia, but had also stepped back from edge of abyss. Putin asserted that Russia's involvement in Syria was limited to its two military bases, denying the presence of Russian troops despite evidence to the contrary. He also claimed that the primary beneficiary of the Syrian war was Israel and emphasized that Russia's goals in Syria had been achieved because terrorists had not gained power. On Ukraine, Putin suggested that Moscow would only engage in peace talks with President Volodymyr Zelensky if he ran in legitimate elections and gained legitimacy. He added a cryptic comment about offering Zelensky asylum if he ever found himself abandoned by Western allies. He concluded with a chilling remark, "If Zelensky jumps out like a jack-in-a-box, Russia may offer him asylum." Well, what he indicates here is that Zelensky's term, in fact, ran out, but since Ukraine is at war, the elections have been postponed. This way, he's trying to prevent sitting at the table and negotiating and specifically signing the ceasefire deal. right? So Putin's comments reflect a disturbing view of war and refusal to accept responsibility for Russia's international actions. His rhetoric underscores an ongoing attempt to distort historical and political realities, presenting Russia as a global power acting in self-defense. By framing military conflicts as action and challenging the West with provocative language, Putin continues to justify aggression as means of preserving Russia's perceived security and influence. Meanwhile, his remarks on Ukraine and Syria reflect an effort to delegitimize opposing leaders and rewrite the narrative of Russia's foreign interventions. This direct line, once again, offers insight into Kremlin's priorities and propaganda strategies, leaving observers questioning the stability of Russia's leadership and its role in future global conflicts. I would add, I would also question his own stability, because who says such things? Well, Ukrainian President Zelensky tweeted a comment in response to a video snippet from Putin's speech saying, quote, "People are dying and he thinks it's interesting. Dumbass," unquote. Well, also good to know, Women's Power Index. New data from CFR's Women's Power Index. CFR stands for Council for on Foreign Relations. They ran an extensive survey, and they wanted to show the world and professionals on where women stand in terms of power, right? Hence the Women's Power Index. And so this index tracks countries on their progress toward gender parity and political representation. So it turns out 26 out of 193 countries have a female head of state or government. 15 out of 193 countries have at least 50% women in the national cabinet. 6 out of 193 countries have at least 50% of women in the national legislature. Now, as to Air Force, today I was honored to join a meeting with the Secretary of the Air Force, Frank Kendall, who provided insights into the current state of the Air Force and offered advice for incoming leadership. And here's what I learned. During the session, Kendall addressed recent comments by Elon Musk, who labeled the F-35 program as inefficient. Kendall firmly defended the investment in the production of these planes, citing their critical role in recent operations. He highlighted that just this week, U.S. Air Force jets, not drones, were successfully deployed to target and eliminate ISIS military positions in Syria. While expressing respect for Musk's engineering expertise, Kendall remarked, quote, "He would need to learn the Pentagon business first before making controversial comments," unquote. Reflecting on his tenure, Kendall shared a pivotal moment from when he first assumed office. He had asked which war was the Air Force should be prepared to fight. The response, a potential invasion of China or possibly Russia. Guided by this answer, Kendall prioritized training and preparation to counter such threats. He acknowledged that the war in Ukraine influenced the Air Force's goals, specifically focusing on preventing invasions like the Russia's actions in Ukraine from occurring in any NATO country. However, Kendall noted the Air Force's relatively small size as a limitation, emphasizing the need for expansion to strengthen capabilities. When asked about advice for the next administration and his successor, Kendall emphasized the importance of experience. He urged new leaders to seek guidance from the seasoned men and women of the Air Force who possess invaluable expertise and knowledge. He said that the Pentagon will follow the policies of any administration, but those without sufficient experience, such as those nominated by Trump, should rely on the wisdom of their teams. Later in the day, a video, by the way, surfaced of Elon Musk addressing Air Force personnel. In it, Musk encouraged them to fight like hell to make the future great. Notably, Musk has neither been nominated nor elected, yet he appears to involve himself in various aspects of government even before Trump assumes office. Now, the contrast between Musk's rhetoric and Kendall's practical strategy-driven remarks highlights a shift in perspectives on leadership and innovation within the armed forces. As they say, or to quote President Biden, so help us God. Well, China has rapidly expanded its nuclear arsenal, growing its operational warhead stockpile from 500 to 600 in the year leading up to mid-2024, according to the U.S. Department of Defense's latest report on Beijing's military capabilities. The report highlights significant advancements on China's nuclear program, despite internal challenges stemming from corruption scandals within its armed forces. China's nuclear buildup remains a key concern for U.S. defense officials. The Pentagon predicts China's arsenal will exceed 1,000 warheads by 2030, continuing a trend of accelerated growth. However, this year's report omitted a 2022 projection that estimated China could amass 1,500 warheads by mid-2030. An unnamed defense official suggested that the Pentagon is exercising caution with its forecast due to uncertainties surrounding China's military trajectory. Construction of new nuclear silos and the potential for attacks targeting U.S. territories like Guam underscore Beijing's ambitions. However, the report notes that China currently lacks the comprehensive military capabilities necessary for an invasion of Taiwan. Internal corruption within China's military has cast a shadow over its modernization efforts. The report details how recent graft scandals among senior ranks have prompted a far-reaching purge that spans every branch of the armed forces. These disruptions may have impacted Beijing's goal of achieving full military modernization by 2027. Despite these challenges, the Chinese military continues to prioritize the expansion and diversification of its nuclear arsenal. The Namibian government has initiated an investigation into Chinese firm Xinfeng for alleged illegal mining activities in one of the country's lithium-rich regions, the Energy Ministry announced yesterday. Namibia, home to Africa's fourth richest lithium reserves, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, has seen growing interest in its critical mineral deposits. Lithium, a key component in batteries for electric vehicles and renewable energy technologies, has become a highly sought-after resource globally. The probe highlights concerns over the regulation of mining activities and the need to ensure that resource extraction adheres to legal and ethical standards. Now, NATO's new command post in Wiesbaden, Germany, is now operational, according to NATO Chief Mark Rutte. The facility has assumed responsibility for coordinating Western military aid to Ukraine, a task previously managed by the United States. The development underscores NATO's commitment to supporting Ukraine amid the ongoing conflict with Russia. The Wiesbaden post is expected to enhance the efficiency of military assistance efforts, ensuring timely and organized delivery of aid to Ukrainian forces. In a broader indication of the war's global impact, South Korea's spy agency revealed today that at least 100 North Korean fighters have been killed in the conflict. This marks yet another instance of the international dimensions of the war, as nations from various regions find themselves indirectly or directly involved in the crisis. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced an additional $200 million in humanitarian aid for Sudan on Thursday, addressing food, shelter, and healthcare needs amid the ongoing conflict. Speaking at the United Nations Security Council in New York, the session focused on Sudan, Blinken emphasized the urgency of ensuring aid reaches those in need swiftly and safely. The conflict in Sudan has resulted in tens of thousands of deaths and caused the world's largest displacement crisis, underscoring the critical need for international support and effective aid delivery mechanisms. A senior White House official raised concerns on Thursday over Pakistan's development of long-range ballistic missile capabilities that could potentially target regions beyond South Asia, including the United States. Deputy National Security Advisor John Feiner, speaking at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, described Islamabad's actions as troubling. Quote, "Candidly, it's hard for us to see Pakistan's actions as anything other than emerging threat to United States," unquote, Feiner said, emphasizing the strategic implications of Pakistan's missiles advancement. The remarks highlight growing U.S. apprehension about nuclear-armed Pakistan's intentions and the potential geopolitical ramifications of its missile development program. A French court has convicted 51 individuals, including the main defendant, Dominique Pelicot, following a closely watched rape trial. The case has sparked significant attention and has brought to light concerns about the rise in drug-facilitated sexual assaults. In the aftermath of the trial, doctors and social workers in France have reported an increase in women coming forward to report similar assaults, according to Reuters. This surge in reports highlights the ongoing challenges in addressing sexual violence and the importance of continued efforts to support victims and combat these crimes. The trial and its aftermath underscore the broader societal issues surrounding sexual assault, particularly involving drugs used to facilitate such crimes. The court's convictions are seen as a step toward justice, but the rise in reported cases indicates the need for further vigilance and systemic change to prevent such incidents. And that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow me across social media. It's at Honest Press, ONESTPRESS. Please let me know what you think about this podcast and also what you would like me to cover. Don't forget the links in the description of this episode. And see you tomorrow for the AM Actual News on YouTube and then right here on the Actual News podcast tomorrow afternoon. Have a great night and a wonderful day.